The Awana Partnership is presenting an illustrated lecture and book signing with acclaimed author Andrea Wolf at Hudson High School on Saturday, April 9th at 4 p.m. The event will be Wolf's first East Coast stop on her U.S. and U.K. tour. The Invention of Nature is Wolf's newest. It's her award-winning biography that reveals the extraordinary life of the visionary German naturalist Alexander von Humboldt and how he created the way we understand nature today. Perceiving nature as an interconnected global force, he turned scientific observation into poetic narrative and inspired Frederick Church on numerous levels. Andrea Wolf joins us this morning to talk about the book and her upcoming event, and we welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you back on the program. Again, the name of the book is The Invention of Nature, Alexander von Humboldt's New World. Why did you want to write about von Humboldt?
Because he is one of the most extraordinary historical people I have ever encountered in my career. He is this, he's a German scientist, but he's also an intrepid explorer. He goes on a five-year exploration in Latin America. He is incredibly restless. He describes himself as being chased by 10,000 pigs, and he comes back from this exploration, and he comes up with a new way of seeing nature, which is pretty much still shapes our thinking today. He comes up with this idea that nature is a web of life. He describes Earth as a living organism where everything is connected. And he also warns in 1800 about harmful human-induced climate change. So he's really the forgotten father of environmentalism. So his life is absolutely fascinating because it combines adventure and science and environmentalism. And that's the extraordinary thing for a scientist. Also, he's a great inspiration for artists such as Church, for example, who actually followed his footsteps through Latin America.
Talk a little bit about that following and the influence that he had. How did that partnership begin?
Well, they actually never met, but Humboldt writes a book called Cosmos, which becomes a huge international bestseller. The first volume is published in 1845, and with this book, he takes his readers on an incredible journey from outer space to Earth, from the tiniest fleck of moss to the highest volcanoes, but also from botany to poetry and landscape painting, because Humboldt very much believed that the arts and the sciences belong together. He talked about the bond that unites natural knowledge with artistic feelings. His second volume of Cosmos is really his rallying call for artists to go out there and paint landscapes. And Church read Humboldt's books, and at their house in Olana, they still have Church's copies of Humboldt's books, which is amazing. So they're still, the copy of Cosmos that Church owned is still there. So Church reads in Cosmos about these things. He reads about how Humboldt says, you know, artists go out and paint nature. So he very happily follows this advice, and he goes twice to South America, once in 1853 for 7 months, and then again in 1857 for about 2 months. And he reads a biography about Humboldt, and through that biography, he can work out the itinerary that Humboldt had taken, and he follows him step by step. So he follows the exact route. He goes to the same places in Colombia and Ecuador, and later also to Mexico. He saw the same landscapes. He saw the same mountains, and he painted what Humboldt had described in his books. And he comes back and paints his very famous painting, The Heart of the Andes, which really is almost Humboldt's philosophy writ large on canvas.
In fact, you say in the book, if I'm remembering correctly, that the New York Times said it was the artistic Humboldt of the New World.
Exactly. So people who saw Church's art very much understood that he was following Humboldt's ideas with this. And there's a quite tragic moment when Church is exhibiting the Heart of the Andes. It's so popular. There are thousands of people seeing this painting. It's in New York. They're queuing. There are long lines along the block. And when the exhibition is finished, he intends to send the painting to Berlin. And he wrote to a friend on the 9th of May, 1859, that he wants to send it to Humboldt. But he didn't know that Humboldt had died 3 days earlier in Berlin. So there's this moment where Humboldt would have almost seen this incredible painting, but he just died a little bit too early, which was very tragic for Church, who had been so excited to send it to him.
Humboldt passed away in 1859. We talk about the influence he had on Church, but you write extensively in the book about the number of big names that he influenced in his life. Just give us a thumbnail sketch of his influence, and not only how important it was, but also just how far-reaching it was.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about Humboldt today is that he's almost forgotten in the English-speaking world, but he was the most famous scientist of his age. So, for example, Thomas Jefferson met him and admired him and called him his friend for the rest of his life. Charles Darwin said he would have never boarded the Beagle and therefore not written The Origin of Species without Humboldt. Henry David Thoreau's Walden would have been a very different book without Humboldt's writing, because he was struggling to write Walden and kind of put the manuscript away, and then he read Humboldt's books and he kind of unpacked the manuscript and completely rewrote it. John Muir, for example, said as a young man, "How intensely I want to be a Humboldt," and his ideas on forest preservation are very heavily influenced by Humboldt. Emerson admired him, called him one of the wonders of this world. I mean, it just goes on and on and on like this. Simon Bolivar, for example, the man who liberated the Spanish colonies in South America, said that Humboldt's writing had invigorated his revolutions, that it was Humboldt's pen that had awakened South America. So Humboldt is this very forgotten person today, but he was so famous that, for example, if you were an American scientist and you would go to Europe, the first thing you would do is you would go to Paris, where he lived, or later in Berlin, and you would visit Humboldt. That was part of the grand tour of Europe for a scientist.
When you consider that this man had such influence, I'm curious as to, because you write, and even a moment ago I was reading about particular quote from the New York Times. This is all around his death, really. When did people start to take notice and realize and follow him in a contemporary sense?
Well, he returns in 1804 from his exploration in Latin America. And during that time, while he was in Latin America for 5 years, he would regularly write letters to his friends and acquaintances in Europe, who would then get them published in newspapers. So by the time he returned in 1804, he was already celebrated like a hero. He was so famous already then that when he arrived in, he did a little detour on his way back to Europe, and he stopped in North America, the United States, and he stopped in Philadelphia, and he wrote a letter to Jefferson, who was then the third president of the United States, just writing to him, like, "I've just come back from this exploration. I'd really like to meet you." And Jefferson writes immediately back, "Yes, please come to Washington." I mean, that's how famous he's already then. And then when he returns, he begins to write so many books that he himself loses track how many books he has published. And a lot of these books are huge international bestsellers, because what he does is although he's a scientist, he creates a new literary genre when he combines poetic landscape descriptions with scientific observations. So these are books which are aimed at a general audience, not at specialist expert scientists. So he brings this new world of extraordinary landscapes, of volcanoes, of tropical rainforests into the homes of, you know, educated middle-class people. And he becomes incredibly famous through that.
When you come to Alana for this event on the 9th, what is the message? What will you be talking about?
Well, I will be talking about Humboldt himself, about his life, about his adventures, but also about his influence on other people, because not a lot of people know about him. I will also talk about his influence on church, obviously. I'll talk a little bit about his influence on Thoreau and Darwin, just to kind of pick a few. But what I want to do is to make people aware of this man and how he talked, for example, about how we, how humankind was destroying nature. So I'm going to talk about his early ideas on environmentalism, on harmful human-induced climate change. So it's a kind of gallop through his life and his influence, if you want to explain it like that.
I like that. What is, for you, the legacy of this man and his work is what?
Well, there are many things, but I think one of the most important things for me is that he comes up with this idea that Earth is a living organism where everything is connected. And because everything is connected, it's also vulnerable. So if you pull one thread, you might the whole tapestry of nature might unravel. So for me, his legacy is really that he's given us our concept of nature, a concept of nature that still very much shapes our thinking today.
The name of the book is The Invention of Nature, Alexander von Humboldt's New World. When you're done a project like this and you're still speaking about him and speaking about the book, what is next for you?
Well, that is a really unfair question.
Okay.
I have to say, normally at this stage I would be writing a new book, but I haven't started a new book because whatever I start, I get so bored with, because everything compared to Humboldt seems so utterly pale, because he's such a larger-than-life figure.
Right.
So right now, I'll be on a two-month book tour through America, so that keeps me busy and stops me panicking about not having a new book idea. So right now, I'm still very much with Humboldt.
Let me ask you this question. Does it, in the research to this book, did it lead you to any ideas and thoughts of things that you could explore further of other people or other issues that were fascinating?
Well, you always kind of find some people, and then you read about them, and then you either realize they're not interesting enough or there's not enough primary source material about them, because I construct my stories very much based on the journals and letters of that person. So I want their kind of personal views in the book. So sometimes you find someone really interesting, and then sadly you can't find the right sources for it. I am always fascinated by the relationship between humankind and nature. So that's a kind of field I always work in. So I'm looking at other explorers. I'm looking at other kind of people who have early ideas on environmentalism. So that's the kind of field that I'm interested in.
Does, and this is a question that I meant to ask you earlier, but it does fit in now as well, which is, as you said, so few people know about this extraordinary man who, as you've just indicated, it's a hard act to follow. Why do you think that is the case, that so few people know who he is and that work has largely been overshadowed?
Well, let me point out that he's still very famous in Latin America. So, for example, when I followed Humboldt's footsteps through Latin America, I was amazed that every school child has heard his name. He's as famous there as Jefferson is famous in North America. I think one of the reasons why he's forgotten elsewhere is that his name is not really connected to a single discovery, so not like Darwin's theory of evolution or, he didn't come up with a universal natural law or something like that. He didn't discover a continent. So what he did is he came up with a holistic worldview, a view that still shapes our thinking today, and it's almost as if his ideas have become so self-evident that the man behind the ideas have disappeared. That's, I think, one reason. The other reason is that he was really the last of the polymaths. So when he dies in 1859, that's really the last moment where one person can know so much, you know, where you can hold all this knowledge in one head, basically. After that, the sciences specialize so much so that these expert scientists begin to look down on people like Humboldt and think that, you know, he's more something like a dilettante or an amateur. And then I think not unimportant probably is also that, so he's famous until World War One, and then you have a very strong anti-German sentiment in the States and also in England. This is a time when, for example, American public libraries burn German books. So that's not really a time anymore to celebrate a German scientist. So all of these things together, I think, might explain a little bit why he's so forgotten. But I'm doing my best to kind of get him back onto the pedestal he belongs on.
You certainly are. It's a beautiful book. It's fascinating. And it is entitled The Invention of Nature, Alexander von Humboldt's New World. The OANA Partnership is presenting an illustrated lecture and book signing with the author, Andrea Wolf, at Hudson High School on Saturday, April 9th at 4 p.m. Go to OANA.org for more information. Andrea Wolf, thanks so much for being with us and safe travels.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.